You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, it can be hard to talk to kids about issues related to race, but there are books that can help. We'll get a great reading list from the Smithsonian for a variety of ages with books that can help start important conversations. Now, in an effort to lift spirits and maybe bring the bar to you, Miller High Life held a contest to give away a backyard dive bar and enough beer for the rest of 2020. Of the more than 100,000 submissions, 20,000 were from Wisconsin alone, and one lucky Wisconsinite won it. Jim Kasten is the winner of Miller High Life's Backyard Dive Bar Contest. He's a former dairy industry executive and lives in Shawano. Jim, congratulations and thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's been a fun experience.
I bet. Now, what led you to enter and try to win this dive bar?
Well, part of my routine in the evenings, I check the state's media, radio, television, newspapers, just to see what's going on. And I stumbled across this promo, and I'm not even sure which media I saw it in. And I thought, well, that'd be fun. And so I encouraged my daughter, and I encouraged one of my grandkids to enter the contest because it would fit on their yards. And then I thought, well, maybe I should too, and I did. And to my surprise, won.
Yeah, what was your reaction when you won out of 100,000 entries, you won the dive bar?
Well, when I first got the electronic communication from the folks at Miller High Life, I thought, well, this is one of those things, you know, you're doubtful about what comes across the internet these days. So I sat back, well, we'll see if I get another one, and I did. And so I was convinced that we had one, and we proceeded with filling out the forms to qualify, and started working with the sales and PR staff at Miller High Life and also the people in Chicago that they had commissioned to build the dive bar on property. I chose to put it on my daughter's property because they had a much nicer, flatter situation. We live on the river, and it's got a big slope and a lot of trees. So we put it on her property by her fire pit. And so everybody's having fun with it.
And we can't show the picture on the radio, Jim. So describe to us what this new dive bar looks like.
Well, it's a pretty good replica of what you might think of a dive bar. It's got a popcorn cart inside of it. It's got some antique signs. It's got the neon Miller High Life sign. They said it was going to have sticky floors. I guess we have to provide that because it doesn't at this point. And it sits on a nice deck. It's about 8 by 12. We've already got a collection of dollar bills going up on the ceiling.
Now, I've spent some time in dive bars, some with very uneven floors and poor construction. Your dive bar looks pretty nice compared to some of the ones I've seen.
Yeah, I complimented Miller and also the builder out of Chicago that they used excellent materials and did a very nice job. They were here 2 days when the weather just turned cold, if you recall, in late October, and it was pretty ugly. In fact, it was snowing one of the days, but they got it done.
Well, now, hopefully by next summer, Jim, we're going to hopefully be in a post-COVID world. Knock on wood, what are your hopes for, you know, entertaining in your new dive bar?
Well, of course, all of our friends want to say we got to have a party. And I say, well, really need a benefit because I got a tax liability with this. So, but I don't think I'm going to get much help on that. So we'll the kids already have had a couple of parties there, and we're looking forward to getting our older friends together sometime next year when old soul gains some strength again.
Now, do you need a bouncer there to tell people, you know, they don't have to go home, but they can't stay there?
That might be a good idea. I've got a few friends that would fit that size, yeah.
And how much Miller High Life does it take to get you to the end of 2020, if I may ask?
Well, not as much as it used to, obviously, when I'm 79 years old, but I figure maybe another few cases will take care of us.
All right, Jim, thank you so much for joining us. And again, congratulations.
Well, thank you. It's been fun talking with you, Rob.
Jim Kasten was the winner of Miller High Life's Backyard Dive Bar Contest. He's a former dairy industry executive and lives in Shawano. We've got a link up, by the way, at WPR.org/Central Time. You can see Jim with the bar. Right now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Carl Christensen with a story about longing for home.
Moving away from Wisconsin can be an exciting adventure for some people. For others, it can be a tough and lonely journey. Writer and Wisconsin native June Melby reflects on the time she moved out west and how a vintage jacket helped her feel a little less homesick.
I'd been living in Los Angeles for a couple of years, but it still didn't feel like home. People were different from what I'm used to back in the Midwest. People bragged about themselves, openly, which came as a shock. Women dressed like teenage boys. Men groomed their hair with more products than I'd ever owned. And everyone checked their reflections in store windows as they walked past. I was lonely, and I was homesick. Then, a gift arrived from my mother. A blue corduroy FFA jacket. Future Farmers of America, said the emblem, with Waupaca, Wisconsin in gold, embroidered letters on the back. Retro clothing was all the rage in Hollywood, so even though I had actually never been a member of Future Farmers, I wanted that jacket. Zip front, pockets, and a collar designed back in the 1930s and never updated. Perfect for a night out in California when the desert air begins to chill. And that's when I noticed. People recognized that jacket. Well, not all people, but certain people. Namely, anyone who was from the Midwest, or grew up in a small town, or came from Wisconsin. They'd find me at coffee houses and comedy clubs. Are you from Wisconsin? Yep, me too. At parties and theater lobbies. Were you in FFA? No, but my father was a farmer. My dad was too. My mom must have heard me say I wanted one, so she put an ad in the local paper and got two replies. A guy drove out from town to give the jacket to my mom. He wouldn't even take any money, she said. I offered, but he was tickled that someone even wanted it. But it's the Midwest, and my mother didn't believe you should take anything for free. We owned a miniature golf course, and she traded the jacket for 10 free game cards. He was thrilled, she said. Every time I wore the blue FFA jacket, I'd meet someone from the Midwest. They'd suddenly appear out of the crowd, and we would talk about how odd it felt to be in Los Angeles. Isn't it funny they call this winter? I know, it's 55 degrees. My landlord's wearing a parka. At Walgreens near me, sprayed their windows white to make it look like snow. We'd roll our eyes and laugh, oh no, and shake our heads. Total strangers instantly close, like long-lost, distant cousins talking about our hometowns. What we shared was the secret of the blue corduroy jacket, but there was something else we shared, the knowledge of what we had each left behind, what we had given up to pursue our dreams. At a certain point, we'd look at each other and sigh, well, yes, I guess I'd better go. Then we'd wish each other good luck on the next audition, meeting, or attempt at landing a better day job. I hope you make it, I would say in a whisper. You too, they would whisper back. Then they melted back into the crowd and into the warm winter night.
June Melby is a writer and performer who lives just across the border in Iowa. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of WPR and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Carl Christensen.
Coming up, it can be hard to talk to kids about issues of race and protest, but our guests share some advice and a reading list to help guide your choices. That's coming up next here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, holiday programming, a new station in southern Wisconsin, and a chat with the host of 1A. We'll get to those topics and more coming up during the November edition of Mondays with Mike. Now, it can be difficult to know how and when to talk about difficult topics with children. And with current issues of race, racism, and protests around the country, it can be hard to know where to start and what resources are available. Two staff members at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture put together a list of books for children and young people. Kendra Flanagan is the staff lead for the Teaching and Learning Unit of the Education Department at the National Museum of African American History and Culture. And Anna Hindley is director of the Early Childhood Education Initiative at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. Anna, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having us.
And Kendra, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. It's an honor. Thank you.
Anna, can you tell us why you put together this list of books aimed at children of different ages on these topics like skin color, racism, and protest?
Sure. So Kendra and I worked together on this list because it is a concrete step in a practice that is the practice of being anti-racist and raising anti-racist, anti-biased children. The work really is daily. It's a muscle to build, and it's in each choice we make. And so with children's literature and books, that's something that most families value and bring into their homes. It's certainly in the classrooms. And so in those books, in those messages, like in the images that we see in books are incredibly powerful in telling children whose stories matter and the social cultural narrative. And so while the work of being anti-racist, like I said, is a practice and ongoing, looking at books with children is one concrete thing that you can do to really like critically assess the images and words children are digesting daily.
Kendra, you and Anna came up with a lot of titles for the list. Was it hard to find? Is there a lot of coverage of these issues in books for young children and older children?
The field and the arena of children's literature is constantly changing and reflecting our society and our societal needs and desires. So we've seen in recent years and now more importantly within the past few months an explosion of literature that is more aimed towards having these conversations, towards opening the door for these conversations with families, caregivers, educators, and the children that are in their lives.
And I could see a parent saying, yeah, I see race as a very important topic, but for a little kid, I don't feel like they're ready for that. What would you say to them?
Oh, my gosh. I think you just asked one of the questions I've been asked most in my career, because I think that is really heavy on the hearts and minds of adults, is that what they don't want to do is point something out that then leads to prejudice and bias and racism. Right. But what actually we're doing when we talk about what we see, talk about race, talk about difference, is we are really honoring children for who they are as learners. So what we know is that children see racing starting at 6 months. And by 3 years old, children are making decisions based on like who they play with, based on race. And then by 5, 6, 7, you really see those like pre-prejudicial thinking turn into prejudice. So by not having conversations, our silence is speaking louder than our words possibly could by saying this is taboo, this is something we can't talk about, this is off topic. But the reality is we live in a racialized culture where race matters and race impacts every one of our lives. And we have to have these conversations starting out in the very early years, with starting from birth, in a way that is layered, so that celebrates difference but acknowledges difference. And then as the years go with the child's life, you can build in the conversations about justice and fairness, and you put it in the language that they understand. And every 3, 4, 5-year-old is going to relate to what is fair, what isn't fair, and what is hurtful. And so that's how we have those layered conversations. But it's a conversation that has to happen starting at birth.
And Kendra, Anna mentioned the conversations, and the idea of this book list isn't just hand the kids the book and walk away. You make the point on there that it's the books plus talking to the kids about what they're looking at, the pictures and the words. Talk about how we can have a successful conversation.
Absolutely, yes. Using literature, children's books as a doorway, as an opening for conversations, as a conversation starter with the children in your lives is a really important concept. For many of us know that the more that children are read to, the more words, the more vocabulary, the more concepts that they're exposed to, the better for their overall growth and just intellectual and social maturity. Having books that talk about being anti-racist and that look at race and look at the history, it gives us an opportunity to really talk about these concepts, talk about the vocabulary, expose kids. It, again, speaks to what Anna was speaking about earlier, is like it gives us a way to have these conversations and not stay silent. Also with older children, thinking about a way into understanding what they already know, what they have conceptualized, what they're already understanding, and getting into that emotional conversation of what things may have happened to them, what may be happening in their own lived experience. Books give us that bridge to having those conversations.
We're talking to Anna Hindley and Kendra Flanagan from the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture, looking at a reading list they have out on issues like racism, race, anti-racism, and protest for kids and their parents. Well, let's start naming some names, Anna. What were some of the titles you were most excited to get on this list?
Oh, my gosh. It was really hard to narrow it down to 12 books. Kendra and I are both such enthusiasts of books. And I think, though, what excites me is really that we can start at birth with children. And so the books like Shades of People, Shades of Black, both of those are so appropriate that you can start looking at with your infants and then layer in the language as the child grows. And we know that children really connect to photographs, and it's such an opportunity for parents to have rich conversations and also kind of have that safety net. If this is something new for the adult, a new conversation for the adult, that books provide that. And I love both of the images and Shades of People and Shades of Black, and the seeing the range of humanity.
And Kendra, how about some books as we move up to kids who are a little older than that?
For me, particularly thinking about this list, Stamped by Jason Reynolds and Ibram X. Kendi, and the book Enough, 20 Protesters Who Changed America by Emily Easton. Those are two books that I think really speak to the historical foundations and give parents, caregivers, families an opportunity to really talk about the history and where all of this conversation about race and racism, where this started, how it started, and give some insight on why we are where we are today.
And I want to talk about your audience here. Are you, is this pitched toward parents with white children, parents with children of color, or all of the above?
You know, we did a lot of talking about this as we were developing this list. And we really did try to aim it for all of the above, that there's something for everyone on the list. I think there's certainly something to be said to focus on different social identities in books for those, because I think the conversation is certainly different with white parents versus black parents versus, you know, people of color. And so the conversation is going to look slightly differently for each family and each makeup of a family. But we definitely try to include something for everyone. I think the area on the anti-blackness was something that we wanted to offer that we weren't seeing in some other book lists, to really uplift the beauty of humanity, and that there's so much to celebrate about being black and for black people.
Kendra, if a parent goes through the list, burns through all the books that are appropriate for their kid at that age, are there other resources available at the National Museum of African American History and Culture that they could do then to follow up on that?
Certainly, yes. Well, we have a web portal called Talking About Race through our museum's website, which would be a wonderful place for parents, caregivers, families, educators to come and get some more background information for themselves, do some of their own thinking about how they interact and think about race and their own identity, as well as then some tips for opening up conversations with the young people in their lives. And then there are some outside organizations that we both Anna and I, also look to for resources and information. And for one that I think about often is teaching tolerance. And that's a really wonderful space, I think, for educators to really engage in.
We'll make sure we have a link to that at WPR.org/Central Time. Anna, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I was going to add another resource that that we love to learn with and learn from is Teaching for Change. It's a DC organization that's local here, but also has national reach. And they've recently launched a program called Freedom Reads, Anti-Bias Book Talk Series. That's really incredible. And I hope everyone checks out.
We'll leave it there for now. Anna, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Kendra, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Anna Hindley is director of the Early Childhood Education Initiative at the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of African American History and Culture. And Kendra Flanagan is staff lead for the Teaching and Learning Unit of the Education Department, also at the National Museum of African American History and Culture. Anna and Kendra joined us to share their thoughts and a lot of great resources on talking to children and young people about race, racism, and protests. We have those resources, including the book lists. They are linked over at WPR.org/Central Time. Again, find those resources and book suggestions at WPR.org/Central Time. Coming up, we'll get the latest on WPR programming and operations, including some upcoming holiday specials and other changes from WPR director Mike Crane. And we'll invite your questions and comments about what you hear on the air or what goes on behind the scenes here. You can get started now if you got something on your mind. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. We can get some answers to your questions and share your thoughts on this month's edition of Mondays with Mike. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up at 6 on 1A+, how do you explain today's America to non-Americans? Jen White puts your questions to some of the world's best foreign correspondents now working in the U.S. Plus, Jen hears from President-elect Biden's coronavirus task force. That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now it's time for the November edition of Mondays with Mike. Usually we talk to WPR director Mike Crane the first Monday of the month, but because of all the Election Day related news going on, we pushed it back a little bit. Each month he stops by either here on Central Time, on the morning show, or on the Larry Mueller show to talk about what's happening on and off the air. Today we'll talk about special Thanksgiving programming, an upcoming virtual event, a new Ideas Network station, and more. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there something you'd like to hear more or less of on Wisconsin Public Radio? Do you have a question about what you hear on the air, why we do things the way that we do? Do you have questions about WPR.org or the WPR app? Give us your feedback, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Mike Crane is with us now. Mike, welcome back.
It's always good to be here.
Well, Mike, let's start with Thanksgiving, which is somehow just a week from this Thursday. It managed to sneak up on me. We've got a lot of special programming coming up. What do we have in the hopper?
Some really nice traditions. First of all, here on the Ideas Network on Thanksgiving Day from 10 to noon, we have Turkey Confidential.
Oh, yeah.
It's an opportunity to call in with your turkey emergencies, among other things. our own version of the Butterball Hotline, right, Rob?
Exactly.
That's a nationwide show, a lot of fun. And let's see. Sorry about that. And also, this has been a tradition for us from 1 to 3, we're going to have the Third Coast Best of the Best. And it's really remarkable, experimental in many cases, like different ways of telling stories with audio, and a big tradition for us. And then over on the NPR News and Music stations, another nice tradition, the Wisconsin's Best Young Musicians will be played throughout the morning. Wisconsin's Honors Concerts is where that comes from, and that's starting at 10 a.m. And also a regular celebration called Giving Thanks, a celebration of fall, food, and gratitude. And, you know, of course, Rob, this is such an unusual year. The opportunity to remind ourselves of what we're grateful for is a big deal, and it's going to be different, but still an important time to mark, and so glad that people can spend their time with us listening to the radio.
And we'll have a full schedule up on WPR.org. And I'll plug tomorrow, we'll hear from America's Test Kitchen, Mike, with advice on, you know, making that Thanksgiving dinner maybe for a smaller group. So keeping the tradition, changing the scale of it. So lots of good Thanksgiving advice on the way. Well, we had some bittersweet news. Listeners who tuned in on Central Time on Friday heard executive producer and fill-in host Judith Sears-Poisson bid farewell. She left WPR to take on a new role at UW-Madison. Here's a little bit of her talking about that at the end of last week's edition of Food Friday.
And seriously, you know, Central Time is such a fun show to work on. I've always loved the mix of the topics we do, everything from Food Friday and, you know, how to build up resilience to the politics of the day and more. And Rob, I will continue to be a fan of yours. And, you know, I might even be nicer to you now that, you know, I don't feel like I have to tease you all the time.
Excellent. I didn't pick that clip. Somebody else, I didn't include myself in there. Mike, do you want to talk a little bit about our farewell to Judith, a familiar voice here on Central Time in particular?
That's right. It's so hard to say goodbye to friends who, you know, we often spend more time with our colleagues than we even do with our family. And so we'll really miss Judith. She's going on to a great job working on poverty issues that I know are very close to her heart. So we're excited for her while also knowing that we'll miss her. And, you know, she's had such an impact on the show. Also, hundreds of her articles that she's written from several different years over time are still getting engagement online to this very day. And people have heard her during the member drives. And I think her past fundraising experience made her a big booster of the whole effort to find new members and encourage other members to support again.
Talking to WPR Director Mike Crane, looking at some of the news from Wisconsin Public Radio and taking your calls and questions at 800-642-1234. We'll look at some more news, Mike, in just a bit, but let's bring on a caller or two. Tom is with us in Milwaukee. Tom, hi. Tom, do we have you there?
I have a question and a program suggestion. The question is about if you have a policy, or if you could talk about a policy where the call-in host restates the questions as they were stated by the caller. There's been cases where I'd rather have the guest answer the question as it was originally stated rather than as the host restates it. So I wonder if you have any comments on that.
Okay, and then what was your suggestion, Tom, before we let you go?
My program suggestion has to do with books, authors, or publishers. If you've ever had somebody on to talk about that, I haven't heard it. Questions like why write a book and how lucrative is it to write a book? What kind of fact-checking goes on? That sort of thing.
It's behind the scenes in publishing kind of, Tom, it sounds like. Is that what you're saying?
There's a lot of books being published, especially in the political arena, and I'm curious about the process.
Interesting suggestion, Tom, and I'll be very careful throwing his question now, Mike, after his comment there. Your thoughts on what Tom had to say about how hosts throw caller questions to guests.
Yeah, you know, you might have a more insightful comment than I would, Rob, so please feel free. My thought is that every single piece of the art of hosting a program is something that we scrutinize regularly. We talk about in our meetings, you know, did we do this the right way? And I think part of the idea as, you know, as a listener to it, Rob, is that sometimes the question from the listener has several parts to it. And so the host is prepared to kind of distill it and help the person that is our guest to answer the question. Does that make some sense? And what else might you say about it?
That's part of what I do. And honestly, sometimes I might do more restating if I'm worried that the phone line from the caller is not super solid and I'm worried that the guest may not have caught all of the question. I might do a more verbose throw to the guest at that point. I'm sorry if I spin away from a caller's question. I definitely try not to do that. But, I may do things wrong in the moment, or other hosts might as well. Tom, thanks a lot for calling in. Appreciate it. We'll go to Bill now in Superior. Bill, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My comment, questions, whatnot, comes during pledge drive time. I get the 99% of my news from NPR. And when it comes to be pledge drive time, I change the channel. And the reason is, and I love Chapter a Day, love all the different news, you know, that comes from NPR. But the pitch line for drawing in more donations happens every 5-10 minutes or however long it is, in the middle of a story that people are trying to listen to, in the middle of an interesting news section that they're trying to get their information from. Is there any way to change that to just at the top of the hour, bottom of the hour? Because, like I said, during pledge drive time, I change the channel and I'll turn it on the next Monday.
Bill, thanks.
Yeah, Bill, I'm curious. You have a lot of options there in Superior for listening to public radio, don't you?
I do. I prefer listening to WPR. It's just my cup of tea.
Yeah, that's excellent. I'm glad to know that. And, you know, I think a lot of people in the member drive business would be thrilled if we could figure out a way to get as many contributions by asking less often. That's always been the challenge. When we do the member drives, they are our single most successful way of getting new members in particular. And, of course, a lot of current members like yourself will call in as well. And as soon as we find something that works better, we'd love it. Because we do try other methods. We do some direct mail stuff. We solicit, on Facebook when the member drive is on and so on. And the member drives, as interrupting as they are, still are the best thing we've found to raise those dollars.
Bill, thanks a lot for calling and listening. Thanks for joining in at 800-642-1234. Well, Mike, we have a short member drive coming up next month, I think.
Yeah, that's right. We do try to keep them short. And over the years, we've tried to refine it, make each one a little shorter if we can, that kind of thing. It's just Tuesday, December 1st through Saturday, December 5th. And year-end fundraising is a big, big deal. That's why you hear things like Giving Tuesday and why you get a lot of extra mail. It's typically the most successful time of year. The season of giving is that for more than just presents for Hanukkah or Christmas or Kwanzaa or whatever. And so we will be here. I will be here asking people to sign up.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. Well, Mike, some good news that I think probably is in part funded by our listeners. A new Ideas Network station now out of Janesville. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is really exciting. You'd think in the internet era, do we still need to add radio stations? But that's where most of our audience continues to come from. And one of the challenges in Janesville has been that AM 970, which is the best signal normally to receive the Ideas Network there, goes to very low power as it gets dark. It's about how the AM radio waves work. And so this time of year, when the sun sets so early, that means that before this show is over, 970 may go to very low power and not be receivable. So 100.3 FM in Janesville is the brand new frequency. It looks like the coverage throughout, the Janesville proper is great from what we can tell on the maps, and probably wider than that, because often the signal gets a little farther than the map tells us. And you can find the coverage map. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead, Mike.
As I should say, you can find the coverage maps, and that now has that new station listed on it at wpr.org/maps.
I've had drives where during the daytime, AM 970 took me well into Illinois, and at night, not so much. So I've experienced this personally, Mike.
Yep.
It's the November edition of Mondays with Mike. We're talking to WPR director Mike Crane about some of the latest news on WPR programming and operations. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on what you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio? What you like, what you don't like, what you want to hear more or less of? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our talk now with WPR Director Mike Crane. It's the November installment of Mondays with Mike, taking a look at what's going on the air and behind the scenes here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Still time for you to share your questions, your thoughts at WPR. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to your calls now. Barbara is with us in Menominee. Barbara, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just want to make a comment regarding the gentleman who called in a little bit ago about turning the station during the pledge drives. And I can say I sympathize with him because I used to be like that. It used to drive me crazy to have those pledge drives. When I became a sustaining member, it no longer bothers me. I know I'm contributing. I just ignore the pledge drives. I know I'm doing my bit. So that might be something for this gentleman to consider. That's all I wanted to say. Thank
you. Barbara, thanks a lot for sharing that. Thanks a lot for sharing that comment, Mike. And Barbara's not alone. A lot of people becoming sustainers over the years, Mike.
That's right. I was just on a call today where our head of development, Kate LaRock, said it's 48% of our members are now sustainers. It's been a little disorienting because it means that the typical member drive seems like it's raising less money, but it isn't. It's actually still raising it. It's just that more people have converted to that monthly giving.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go to Sonia now in Oregon. Sonia, hi.
Hi. It's my first time ever on the air, so
wow.
I appreciate this, yes. And I listen to NPR all the time. And I just wanted to say that Judith, a shout out to her, man. She was awesome, and she's smart, and I appreciate everything that NPR does every day. So.
Well, thank you so much, Sonia, for calling in for the first time with a tribute to Judith. I think no argument here, Mike.
Yeah, maybe after she's settled in her new job, we could persuade her to sub for you once in a while.
Or we actually had an emailer, Mike, named Ann, who said, hey, she really enjoyed last week's Food Friday with Judith. It was like a warm hug, she says. And she says, you could always bring Judith back as a guest. There's no law against that, is there? I don't think so.
No, not at all.
All right. Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Keith now in Kewaunee. Keith, hi.
Hi. So I was just wondering, in our polarized world where it seems like there's a big split on what people believe, if you ever thought of doing a show like a 1 hour a day and just look at a couple of news topics and look at it the way the conservative Fox News presented the story, the way CBS presented it, the way NPR presented it, just so people would maybe try to get to a point where they understand a little bit more about why one side believes one thing and the other side believes the other. That's all.
Interesting, Mike.
Yeah. That really is interesting. There was a program that we used to carry that did some of that. Called On the Media. People ask about that when they call in sometimes on this Mondays with Me segment. they kind of went a different direction, but it remains very interesting. And more broadly, to Keith's comment, helping people with media literacy, you know, understanding how to consume media, how to make your own judgments about the truth or lack of truth, the slant or lack of slant of the different news outlets is a really good idea. Maybe we can figure something out, and we'll make note of that. Thank you, Keith.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Hey, we talked about adding a station. We're also reducing some HD service. What's going on, Mike?
Yeah. You know, HD radio was going to be a really big deal, the same way that HDTV has been a big deal. But with some exceptions, that really hasn't proven to be the case. And so WPR and our partner, the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board, turned off seven HD radio broadcasts. So no analog stations are going off at all. This was just the digital that was kind of carried along with those signals. And they were carrying an all classical network. So those that were tuning into that, I'm sure were disappointed. But by our calculations, it was probably fewer than 500 listeners. And we've got, you know, 400,000 or 500,000 in a month. And, it really hurts to turn anything off, Rob. Because we're always thinking, like we do with the Janesville edition, thinking about extensions of service. But in this tight budget year, the opportunity to save $60,000 a year in electricity expenses alone, plus future maintenance costs for those transmitters, it feels like a good, if difficult, decision.
Talking to WPR Director Mike Crane. It's our monthly Mondays with Mike conversation. Back to your calls now. Cyril is with us in Madison. Cyril, hi.
Hi there. I just wanted to bring up something that happened when I was listening a couple weekends ago in the evening to the PRX Rewind. During the program, all of a sudden, it would cut off, and your station call letters and frequency number, you know, the automatic announcement that is made just before the hour or before a new program, that was interrupting the program that night. Like every 15 or 20 minutes, it was getting to be really aggravating.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that, Cyril. One of the things that happens to us more because we've got our whole system really extended in various ways. Most of our hosts are in their homes hosting now rather than studios. And of course, that requires a lot more. I kind of picture that old cliche of the cans with the string, and you got to keep the string taut to hear someone through the can. Some of that is what it feels like, and we have definitely had during this time evidence of how much the system is stretched. And we are in the midst of upgrading the systems that play those automated IDs and so on. And we think in about a year or so, we'll have a brand new system in place that should work a lot better. And we do try to catch all those, but obviously that night we didn't. One thing that people don't know, Rob, necessarily, is that we're not always staffed. Long ago, most radio stations, including ours, switched to at least partly being operated by robots, essentially. And that time of night is one of those times. So it may take us a little while to discover it, and then more little while to fix it in those cases.
Thanks a lot for the call. Gary joins us next in Brookfield. Gary, hi.
Hi. Say, the question I have for Mike is this. You've shut down a couple of HD radio stations, and that there was a caller who just talked, brought that up.
Yep.
And I think that's a recognition. It was in your letter also that HD radio is kind of a bust. And so one of the questions I have is, have you ever thought about trying to get your classical programming into the Milwaukee area? I can sometimes pick up the station from Kenosha, but it's not a very good signal. So, you know, I think it would be nice if you could get an FM programming on the classical programming of yours into the Milwaukee area.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned it because it's been on in my almost 13 years here now. It's been on my mind the whole time. And we're actually looking right now at some possibilities for identifying new frequencies to add stations. And unfortunately, it looks like the dial is so crowded in Milwaukee that the only way we could do that would be to buy a station. And that's a very expensive multi-million-dollar prospect in most cases, at least for one that would really serve most of the Milwaukee area. And that's why actually the reason we continue to have the full-time classical station on WHAD is that it's some service, but you need the HD radio, or you can listen to the all-classical station because we still have it online at WPR.org. Not a perfect solution for everybody, but at the moment, the best we're able to do.
Thanks for that call, Gary. And Mike, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure. See you next time.
Mike Crane is the director of Wisconsin Public Radio. He comes on the Ideas Network once a month on Central Time, The Morning Show, or The Larry Mueller Show to talk about the latest at WPR. Next up, December 14th with Larry Mueller. Coming up, it's news, and then we dive nose first in the world of smells. We'll talk about the science behind why certain things smell the way they do. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.